Hello everyone, welcome to Trolling with Logic. It's 1st of December 2012, 6 p.m. GMT, 1 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. We are a live kind of blog TV and podcast show every second weekend, apart from this one, trying to fit in our guests. We focus on issues of science, skepticism, atheism and secularism. Please bear in mind, we do take calls. If you want to call in, the Skype contact is Trolling with Logic. All calls are recorded and then later uploaded, so if you do call, you're granting us permission to use your likeness. If you don't want to call in, just ask a question in the chat room, and if you still want to ask a question, there's just contact us on the email. All the links are below to interact with us later. So, helping me out tonight, as always, the Kirch.
Hey, guys.
And from Skeptic TV, I don't think you've been on any show for a long time. Tilson.
Hello, guys.
And you are the president of the board of directors of the Danish Atheist Society, if I get that right.
No, I'm not the president. I'm on the board of directors.
Sorry.
and international representative.
International representative. So, first off, before we introduce our special guest tonight, Kirch, you've got an announcement about what we're getting up to on the 6th of July this year, next year even.
Hey, guys. As many of you may know, we do a 12-hour charity event every year starting it's the first Saturday in July. Last year our charity was for Atheists Helping the Homeless, our dear friend, run by our dear friend Joseph Mackey. This year we are actually going to be raising money for, on the 6th of July, money for Mental Health Ireland. It's a great charity and it's really worth supporting.
Yeah, I was just going to say, and it's one that's quite close to your heart as well, Kirch, isn't it?
Yes, mental health is quite a close topic for me, given some recent some events.
Yeah.
But it's a really good show, and it'll be a really good show. We hope to start getting guests soon for that, and yeah, hopefully we can raise some good money for that in July.
Okay, and, well, hand you over now, and hand you back, Kirch. You can introduce tonight's guest.
Sure. Today we have the pleasure of having on Michael Nugent, Chairperson of Atheist Ireland. He's an author of 3 books and has co-written, if I got this right, the musical comedy Aikino. He's an activist to probably the reason we have on is for his campaign for separation of church and state in Ireland and repeal of blasphemy laws. Sorry, it's a little bit of a short intro, but...
So,
yeah, thanks. Great to be here. And thank you for inviting me.
Wonderful. So, pretty sure I think we'll just hand over. Kirch, you'll have the first few questions for Michael.
Sure. Just want to start off with one of the most obvious questions. How did you get involved in Atheist Ireland, and why did you decide to devote your time to the separation of church and state and other blasphemy laws and stuff like that?
Well, I've been involved more or less all of my adult life in campaigning on liberal and secular issues in Ireland. We've got unfortunately a kind of sad history of a predominantly majoritarian Catholic sectarian state in the Republic of Ireland and a predominantly majoritarian Protestant state in Northern Ireland. And that's kind of led to a lot of issues, whether it be, paramilitary terrorism that sort of piggybacks on sectarianism, to the Roman Catholic stranglehold on sexual morality and other things within the Republic. So I've been campaigning on those issues for decades. Atheist Ireland began as just a website for Irish atheists called atheist.ie. And about 4 years back now, there was a discussion that sort of spontaneously emerged on that side about perhaps it's a good idea to develop it into a real-life advocacy group that would lobby politicians and that would organise public meetings and that would take part in public debates and so on. So that's what we've been doing for the last few years.
Rand, I just want to also ask about your meetings with the politicians in the Irish government. How receptive are they to your position on the separation of church and state? How responsive are they? Are they more warm to the idea, or are they a bit hesitant? And has that changed in your experience over the last 10 or so many years?
Well, let's say if we go back further than that, let's say we go back to the 1980s when it was illegal to buy a condom in Ireland unless you had a doctor's prescription saying that you were a married couple and that you required the condom for bona fide family planning purposes. Or if you go back a previous decade to the 1970s, when bizarrely the IRA in their campaigns of terrorism in Ireland used to use condoms as part of the timing mechanisms in their bombs, and some IRA members were opposed to using condoms on moral grounds. So that's the kind of Ireland that we were coming from 20, 30, 40 years ago. We're now in a situation where I think that the Irish public have moved on considerably, that Ireland is not, as has been stated recently, a Catholic country. It's a pluralist country, but still with stranglehold of Catholic laws that we have to get rid of. And unfortunately, the politicians are still pandering to the Catholic recent past of Ireland and don't seem to have yet caught up with the people. So the type of campaigns that 20, 30 years ago would have been about trying to change public opinion, I think are now more about trying to get the politicians to recognise that public opinion has already moved on.
And I just want to also ask. Sorry, it's just Monday. just want to also ask, do you guys have any questions? Just don't want to.
Yeah, I was just wanting to know what the latest was on the abortion case. That's kind of, it's been very prominent, and I've seen your face around, like, on media outlets. What's the latest news? Probably best, like, go back to the start of what brought this kind of latest interest in basically abortion laws in Ireland.
Well, that's unfortunately a really tragic case. What happened just a few weeks ago is that it emerged that a 31-year-old Indian woman who went to hospital in Galway, who was 17 weeks pregnant, and she was found to be miscarrying, and the doctors concluded that her fetus had no chance of survival. But because the fetus still had a heartbeat, they declined her repeated requests for an abortion. And they declined that on the basis of, so her husband has put it, telling them that this is a Catholic country. And in Ireland, the Catholic Church, through various campaigns in the 1980s, managed to get a clause in our constitution that makes abortion not merely illegal, but also unconstitutional. And the only time that clause was tested back in the 1990s was when a raped teenage girl was going to England for an abortion, and her family wanted to use the DNA from the fetus as part of the legal case against the neighbour who had raped their daughter. And the state responded to that by seeking an injunction under the so-called pro-life amendment of the constitution, preventing that raped teenage girl from travelling to England for an abortion. That resulted in a court case where the girl challenged the ruling, and it was found by the Supreme Court that she was entitled to an abortion because there was a direct threat to her life as distinct to her health, and that direct threat in her case was that she was threatening to commit suicide. So from 1992, it was the case in Ireland, or is the case in Ireland, that it is lawful to have an abortion if there is a direct threat to your life as opposed to your health. But successive governments for the last 20 years have refused to legislate to vindicate that right, to let women know how they can vindicate that right or whether they qualify for an abortion. And that has led, fortunately, to the situation with Savita a few weeks ago, where it was impossible for her to vindicate finding out whether or not she had a right to an abortion, never mind having the abortion, and she unfortunately ended up dying. There is a strong outcry now among feminist organisations, civil rights organisations and secularist organisations saying not only do we need to legislate now to allow doctors to know when they can carry out an abortion when a woman's life is at risk, but also we really need to get rid of that amendment from 30 years ago that is causing all of the problems by putting theological nonsense into a civic constitution.
Yeah. And I think I heard from Kitch there was a vote just recently on it, wasn't there, the other night?
There was a vote put forward by essentially minority left-wing parties in the Parliament that was seeking to legislate what it's known as the X case of the raped teenager 20 years ago. The amendment was defeated, the vote was defeated by the majority parties on the basis that the government said they were putting in their own legislation within months. We don't know exactly when they're going to do it. Suspects that the TDs who are putting forward that motion knew that it was going to be still important to put it forward just to flush out who was taking what position on this really, really important issue.
The other thing is, because I've been on holiday in Poland a lot, they have a similar situation regarding abortion, don't they?
Yeah, there was a strange situation in Poland where we were. I was actually over in Poland for a couple of months ago for the OSCE's International Human Rights Conference that they have every year. We were there to discuss freedom of religion and conscience. And there was a situation in Poland, which I can't remember, but centered around a woman who was told that if she continued with her pregnancy, that she would be blind. She wanted an abortion, but was supposed to continue with it, and ended up losing her sight. So I mean, there are situations where this legislative obsession with the theological status and of souls and fetuses and embryos and zygotes just takes precedence over the real life suffering of real life women in the real world in which we inhabit. And I think it's really important that whatever people's beliefs about what they think the creator of the universe is telling them about souls of fetuses, that the governments of civic states have enough to be doing dealing with the real world than taking into account this sort of stuff as well.
Okay, I wanted to ask about the youth defence. I know that they're quite notorious. How much of an effect do you think they're having today in the modern campaign for pro-choice? Do you think they're having any real effect on the politicians, or are they becoming more and more relevant as people learn their backhanded tactics?
Well, it's hard to tell, really, because you don't know how the politicians are going to respond, because they tend to respond to the more conservative elements within their constituencies. But certainly the youth defence, who are a particularly sort of virulent anti-choice organisation that has been around for decades in Ireland, started a poster campaign. Now, this is before we knew about Civita dying. Started a poster campaign trying to prevent Ireland from legislation for the X case, which resulted in a spontaneous set of protests initiated by a woman called Sinead Redmond throughout Ireland that had sort of invigorated the pro-choice campaign even before the Civita case happened. So I think what's changing now, apart from natural progression, secularism within Ireland, is there's a generation of young women now who just aren't prepared to put up with this sort of theological dictates in the way that the previous generation had, and are just saying, look, it's not it's not even a question of the Catholic Church and what it's saying. It shouldn't even be the state that is dictating what happens inside a woman's body.
Just to jump in quickly, we are featured now on the front page of Blog TV, so if you're watching on the front page, please join us. We have the chairperson of Atheist Ireland, Michael Nugent, as our guest. We're discussing abortion, separation, church and state, and blasphemy laws tonight. Just on the issue of abortion, we did want a female here, so we're bringing in our good friend Womble. Are you there?
Wow.
So you can interject now some questions on this topic. Are you there?
Yes, I'm now. I'm here. Right. I'm having a mental pause. I wasn't expecting to be asking questions straight off.
What if you have a point to raise on the issue of abortion?
Yeah, no, from a filmer perspective, even if a country was to decide that for elective purposes only an abortion was not allowed, I think it's incredibly wrong and incorrect to say that for medical reasons a woman has to jump through some silly sort of hoops to try and prove that actually she needs that abortion. I think it's, you know, if a country wants to have it on its laws, you know, the thing that says abortion is illegal, I don't necessarily agree with that per se, but, you know, the thing that really gets me with this case is the fact that they denied someone that was medically in need of an abortion to save her life, never mind this infant that may or may not have survived, or the fetuses. I think it's disgusting that she didn't get life-saving medical treatment that she needed on the off chance that the fetus might survive, and that this woman's died as a result. I just kind of view it as being a two-for-one scenario that they were trying to say. Obviously they thought they were trying to save the fetus by not allowing the abortion, but in the end both of them died anyway. I personally think that it would have been much better if they, you know, someone had turned and said, actually, medically, yeah, let's do this, let's save this woman's life and she can have many other babies in the future.
It's kind of weird, because in Denmark we also have a state church, and the Danish Atheist Society, which I also represent, one of our allies in that fight is actually the Catholic Church, which is kind of weird, because when you see, like in Poland, in Ireland, where Catholicism is basically the state religion in Ireland, and in Poland, I don't know if they got in their constitution, but it's basically the de facto state religion there. But it's sort of in a Protestant state religion. It's in Denmark. There's abortion has actually been legal since 1939 and was fully legalized in 1979. It's just kind of weird to see the Catholics in the other countries be so, we'll call it, passionate about having their laws into the state, whilst in Denmark the Catholics are trying to separate state and church.
Yeah, there was a question from the chat room that says, how many Irish women have died because they were denied an abortion? I don't know if you know any specifics to that.
No, well, I don't know what the statistics are about that, because most of the abortions that take place, all of Irish women are women who travel abroad.
Yeah.
Most notably to England and sometimes to Holland. There are 12 women a day travel abroad from Ireland to have abortions, which is a staggering figure. We've had this kind of safety valve of having legal abortion on our doorstep that's enabled us for decades to keep up this fiction that Irish women don't have abortions. But in reality, it is happening. It's just happening a boat or plane trip away instead of on our own shores. And with regard to that issue about saving Savita's life, I mean, it was even worse than that, because in this case, they had concluded anyway that the fetus could not survive. So it wasn't even a case of trying to save the fetus. It was saying that we have to wait until the fetus dies naturally. So we're in a kind of really strange situation, and it shows how corrupted and debased our ethics have become, that it is now considered controversial in Ireland to expect our legislators to pass laws to allow a doctor in a hospital to save the life of a woman who is dying. I mean, that was really the absolute minimal, rock bottom, lowest ethical expectation that you have from even a semi-civilized government. And I find it astonishing that we even have to discuss that, as opposed to taking the position that regardless of whether or not Savita had died, what she had to go through in the days before she died was inexcusable in any case.
I wasn't aware that it had actually come to the point medically the doctors said it needed to be done. I mean, that is, you're right in that it's absolutely disgusting. And I'm just astonished to hear that the doctors were saying that this needs to be done and they were prevented from doing it by law. It's just one of those things that the mind completely boggles.
It is, and what they claim is, and in fairness, I won't say what they claim. I mean, it is actually the situation. What the situation is that because the governments have refused to legislate in order to regulate the right to have abortions when your life is at risk, the doctors don't know what to do, and they don't know whether, if they do this, are they going to be sued? When does it reach a stage where a threat to health becomes a threat to life, and so on? And so you have all of these sort of issues that they have to consider, which they shouldn't have to. But even then, it shows how debased our ethics have become, that it's being discussed in terms of what do the doctors think and what effect will it have on the doctors, instead of what effect is it having on the woman who is pregnant, ill, and possibly dying.
Do the legal people not think of informed consent? I mean, surely if...
No, it's a very odd thing. See, the government has refused for decades to legislate. Not only has it refused to legislate, but on two occasions, it sought further constitutional referendums to try to roll back on that Supreme Court judgment that you do have a right to an abortion if your life is at risk. What they were trying to do was roll back on the option that was there, that the risk of suicide counts as a risk to the life of the mother, and the government was trying to remove that by constitutional referendum. Twice they put that proposal before the people, and twice their proposals were defeated. And yet they still, 20 years later, have refused to legislate, to regulate for that right that the Constitution enshrines and that the Supreme Court has interpreted to enshrine.
Wasn't that Bertie Ahern and Fianna Fáil that tried to do that? Were they the latest to try to roll back that?
Yeah, Bertie Ahern did it in 2002. Yeah, Bertie Ahern, who was the Prime Minister who had to go before tribunals to explain where he got certain amounts of money that he couldn't explain, tried to claim that he had got it as digouts from his friends, ended up trying to explain. Announced by claiming that he won it on the horses. You know, I mean, that's literally the type of ethics that we have in Ireland. So politicians who can make statements like that before tribunals under oath can also try to pass laws preventing suicidal women from saving their lives.
Yes, I remember I was outside the hall on Wednesday. They were broadcasting what was going on outside to us, so we could hear everything. And there were some good speakers. Claire Daly had a great speech, although I'm not too sure about Claire Daly and some other aspects, but she did a really good speech there. But after that, some of the politicians, I was just so annoying and outrageous, just some of the stuff that they were saying.
Yeah, well, what I found very satisfying with regard to Wednesday night outside the Dáil is that having that many people outside the Dáil listening live to speeches within the Dáil, I think is a reflection of interaction with our democracy that's very, very healthy. And I think if that can continue and force the politicians to realise that there are people listening to them, then that will be a good thing for our democracy.
Yes, I think we made our presence felt, and hopefully we'll have something soon, not another 20 years of just this limbo in the legislation.
Sorry, there was a chat room question I'm trying to find. So from Colliding Membranes, is it true women who go to England for abortion are ostracised and hated back in Ireland?
I don't think so. Well, when I say I don't think so, it depends on the part of the country that you live in. Ireland is a very strange combination of societies at the moment. In most of the urban areas, I think people are more pluralist, people have moved on, people recognise, and particularly in cases like that, you know, where there's an individual person involved, a real person, as opposed to a theoretical debate about fetuses and souls and embryos. I think when there are real people involved, most Irish people do recognise, you know, that compassion and empathy are the appropriate responses to these types of situations. Unfortunately, there are still sections of Ireland that are still backward, Catholic, traditional Ireland, And they manifest themselves in many ways. There was a case a couple of years ago where a woman was seriously sexually assaulted outside a nightclub, where the police came across this assault and arrested the man. The man claimed that he had gone out from the toilet, out from the nightclub to go to the toilet, and found the woman in the car park there and was trying to help her. Then CCTV footage emerged of this man carrying the woman out before he sexually assaulted her. He was found guilty. And in between the date that he was found guilty and the date that he was to be convicted, a group of about 50 men, led by the local Catholic parish priest, arranged to turn up on the conviction date and queue up to shake hands with him and commiserate with him before he was convicted, in front of the victim who was sitting there waiting to make her victim impact statement. So you do still have these pockets of backward Catholic bigotry, but the rest of Ireland has moved on.
I remember hearing about that. I felt absolutely sick to my stomach just thinking about it.
Another question from the chat room. Polly Chater asks, why do you think religion still plays the role it does in Ireland, since in most other parts of Europe it's almost been drowned out?
Well, I don't think it does. I think that religion has lost a lot of the power that it has in Ireland. And it, certainly the Catholic Church has lost a lot of the moral authority that it used to claim, with, you know, on the back of decades of raping children being exposed, and on the back of, more significantly than that, of covering up decades of raping children and moving child rapists from place to place, rather than telling the police what was happening. So I think the Catholic Church has lost its moral authority. However, our laws and our constitution still reflect the old Ireland, and our laws and constitution need to change to reflect the new Ireland that we are living in today. And possibly one of the problems is that a lot of the younger generation of people who are no longer Catholic are not really that concerned about changing the constitution or laws. They just ignore the Catholic Church in their lives, and indeed ignore politics to a large extent in their lives. And so the official side of old Catholicism still is managing to linger on longer than it should have been able to.
Do you think the latest case, Savita's case, has highlighted the need for separation of church and state, and has that manifested itself in any way in terms of gaining new members or making a further push to completely separate the Catholic Church from our government?
Yeah, I wouldn't really describe it as a sort of dramatic change to that extent. I think it's all just part of a process. That what is happening in Ireland is a gradual process of people recognising that we're living in a new Ireland. And what we have to change is we have a constitution that requires the president and judges to swear a religious oath before taking office. We have a reference in the constitution to blasphemy being a law. We have a reference in the constitution saying that the state acknowledges that the homage of public worship is due to Almighty God, which, if you think about that, is not even enshrining in our constitution the right of citizens to worship a god. It's enshrining in our constitution the right of this god to be worshipped by the citizens, which is a bizarre clause to have it in the constitution of a republic. We have we need a secular parliament that doesn't start every day by praying to the Christian God to direct every word and act of our politicians, that doesn't pass laws that exempt the Catholic Church not only from tax but from our equality laws, our Equal Status Act, our Employment Equality Act. Both of those have explicit exemptions allowing the Catholic Church to protect the religious ethos of their organisations. So there's a range of things that need to be done in terms of getting getting secular laws, secular education system, secular healthcare system, secular parliament, secular government, secular constitution.
Yeah, I'm just going to jump in there. The poll we're running right now during the show is what people's position on abortion is, and so far 70% agree it should be available on request, 20% only in cases of rape and incest, and 10% when the mother's life is at risk. There's no one actually in our chat room advocating that it just should be totally illegal. So yeah, just keep voting on that. We'll announce the full results at the end. And so, Kitch, are you gonna? Do you have another question there?
I did. Sorry, I just had it, and then it's just.
I wanted to ask about this blasphemy law that was introduced just a few years ago, wasn't it? And it's a 25,000 euro fine is the maximum, if I heard that right.
Yeah, we've a really odd situation in Ireland where blasphemy, it was a common law offence in Ireland before our 1937 constitution. And then our 1937 constitution made it a constitutional offence in Ireland. But the only time that it was tested, which was when a supposedly blasphemous cartoon was published in the newspaper, the courts found that it was impossible to enforce because it didn't define what the offence of blasphemy consisted of. So when the Defamation Act, within which our blasphemy law resided, was being updated a few years ago, everybody had expected that the government would take that opportunity to just delete that blasphemy law. But instead, they passed a new blasphemy law in 2009, which became operational in 2010, defining blasphemy as uttering or publishing material that's grossly offensive in relation to matters held sacred by any religion, thereby causing outrage among a substantial number of adherents of that religion. And on the day that law became operational, Atheist Ireland published 25 blasphemous statements on our website in order to challenge it. If we had been prosecuted, we would have challenged the constitutionality of the law. If, as we suspected, we weren't prosecuted, it brings the law into disrepute and strengthens the political argument for its removal. So we've been campaigning for the removal of that law, both because it's utterly silly and anachronistic in a modern republic, and also because it's been used at the United Nations by the Islamic States to support politically their attempts to make blasphemy a crime internationally.
Yeah, and I think, Tilson, you were speaking just before the show there. I think it's the recent situation in Holland.
Yeah, in Denmark as well, we have a blasphemy law. It hasn't really been used, and it was the Danish newspaper Jyllands-Posten that published those Muhammad cartoons that set a lot of embassies on fire. And there were people who tried to prosecute Jyllands-Posten based on that blasphemy law, but there's no judge in their right mind who wants to take that case. So it's become this sort of law that no one wants to touch, but it's still there. Last time it was used was in the 30s when some fascist was making blasphemy against the Jews. But besides that, yeah, blasphemy has still been there. And now that the Netherlands has gone out and actually removed their blasphemy law with the also the statement that blasphemy laws have no place in the 21st century. We in the Danish Age Society is also going to work on a press release hopefully soon that also will pressure our politicians to remove this blasphemy law. Even though it's not used, it's still the fact that we got the law, the symbolic value of the law being there.
Sorry. Hey, so you finished or did you cut out?
Yeah, I was finished.
All right. So, how explicit is the language in the Irish Constitution with regards to the state religion?
Well, the Irish Constitution did have a clause saying that the Catholic Church had a special position within the state. That clause was removed a few decades ago, more in the context of attempts to try to make the Republic of Ireland less of a Catholic state with regard to Protestants in Northern Ireland in terms of possible unity of Ireland eventually than for any sort of secularist reasons. But we still have a preamble that says that all authority comes from the Holy Trinity. We still have explicit clauses that say that the state acknowledges that the homage of public worship is due to Almighty God, and we still have religious oaths that the President and judges and members of the Council of State have to take. So it is still pretty bad, but not as bad as it started off, although that's a pretty low hurdle.
So, wait, I was one to ask, because we also got a Christian constitution, but can the head of the state in Ireland be a non-Christian? Because in Denmark, it explicitly says that the head of state has to be a member of the Danish church, the Danish Lutheran church.
Now, what you have in Ireland is you have an oath that the president has to swear, which involves starting with the words "in the presence of Almighty God" and ending with asking this God to direct and sustain them. So in theory, I suppose, a dishonest atheist or an unconscientious atheist could swear that oath without meaning it. But in terms of the letter of the Constitution, you have to be a believer in God in order to swear the oath that is required to become president.
And that brings up an interesting point of if you have someone elected that isn't a Christian, you know, they might be, you know, Sikh, Hindu, Muslim, whatever it is, they might still be a firm believer in a God, it's just not going to be the same God, so they'd be in the same sort of situation.
Yeah, and you have another thing which I think is kind of funny in a way, is that if in theory, if somebody was charged with blasphemy in Ireland under the new blasphemy law, you could only be tried before a judge who has sworn to ask God to direct and sustain him in his work. So it would be impossible to get a fair trial for blasphemy in Ireland.
Yeah, you could also, I'm sure, find someone that was a defence that might have been a Christian and that could find, you know, guidance from God saying, actually, no, God really wasn't that offended. If he was, he would have thunderbolted him to death.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, God told me something different.
There's one thing I wanted to ask you about. It was the Dublin Declaration. I think that was done 2 years ago at the World Atheist Convention in Ireland. Can you give us a brief explanation of what that's all about?
Yeah, that was at the World Atheist Convention, which we held in Dublin a couple of years ago. It was outlining a series of freedoms and rights that we're looking for atheist groups. When I say we, it's the delegates internationally to that Dublin Convention are looking for atheists and secularist groups around the world to promote. There's personal freedoms, such as that freedom of conscience and religion and belief are private and unlimited, and that freedom of this religion should only be limited by the need to respect the rights of others. There is promoting secular democracy, which is kind of fairly self-explanatory, that the state should be based on democracy and human rights and the rule of law and not on the basis of theological dictates. Secular education has been identified as a particularly important area because although there are other areas that it is important to have run on a secular basis with regards to citizens today, it's secular education that's needed in order to ensure that future citizens and future generations of citizens are growing up with a sort of an overall objective, critical and pluralistic approach to these theological claims, rather than every generation having to start off again trying to explain why we need secularism. And the fourth area is that there should be one law for all. And that we shouldn't have religious organisations in any way, whether that be through impositions on the civic law or through alternative Sharia law courts, should not be allowed to administer justice. There should be one law for every citizen.
All right. And so is this something, sorry, I'm going to have to back through, and it's something like you want to see implemented like internationally? You would hope so.
Something that we would like to see atheist and secular groups to use as a
guideline. So.
You know, I mean, the situation will be different in every country, but I think they capture broadly the areas in which it's important: personal freedom, secular democracy, secular education, and one law for all. I think, however, the situation differs on the ground in each country, that those are the areas that it's important to campaign on.
J311 was asking, why did the, I think this is going back to the abortion issue, why did the law need more time if abortion is a human rights issue? I don't know if you can really answer that.
Well, I mean, it doesn't need more time. The problem is the government has refused to legislate for 20 years. And even that 20 years starts at the X case when the Supreme Court said then it was inexcusable that the government had not legislated in the previous 10 years since the abortion amendment had been passed. So I don't think it's particularly any more complicated than it is in any other country where they do have abortion laws. It's just that the Irish government, in acts essentially of political cowardice, have abdicated their responsibility to legislate.
Mm-hmm. And, just going on about the abortion, do you think that they will eventually change the laws or the constitution for the abortion laws? I mean, do you think it's just a matter of time?
Yeah, I do think it's just a matter of time. How long, we don't know. And typically these things, that, you know, they tend to happen in jumps and starts and suddenly when you don't necessarily expect it. But I do think that not only in Ireland, but throughout the world, societies are moving in the direction of secularism. There's an interdisciplinary group of social scientists that produce a thing called the World Values Survey every few years on a rolling basis around the world. And what they are finding is that more and more individuals are moving from survival values to self-expression values, and the cumulative effect of enough individuals doing that around the world is that societies are moving from traditional religious values to secular rational values. And it's happening at different speeds in different places around the world, with the exception of the part of Africa, where for some reason it doesn't seem to be happening. But elsewhere, that is the direction in which things are moving around the world.
All right, I think we might have a caller lined up. So, guys, if you can carry on. I've just got to duck behind the scenes for a second.
Yes, I just want to ask about secular education. I know pretty much all the schools in my area are pretty much Catholic or multi-denominational. If we were to get this secular education, would they have to become privatised, or how would that work?
Well, Ireland has a strange approach to education. The state does not provide education. The state uses the phrase it provides for education. And it does that by essentially franchising out the education system to private patron bodies, most of which are religions. The Catholic Church runs 92% of the primary schools in Ireland. The Protestant and other churches run most of the rest. And then there's a small number of Educate Together schools where the patron body is multi-denominational. But there are no non-denominational primary schools in Ireland. There are no secular schools in Ireland. And by secular school, I mean a school that would teach objectively about the different religions that different people believe in, but would do so in an objective, critical and pluralistic manner. And but that option doesn't exist. We're told that we have choice between different schools, but really the choice that we have is like telling a vegetarian that, you know, you can have a choice between, you know, steak or pork or fish. And when you say, well, no, I'm a vegetarian, you're told, well, you know, the fish isn't too bad.
I know from my own experience, the primary schools, that they do all the sacraments, confirmation and communion. If you're an atheist or agnostic or not even Christian or Catholic, you send your child there because there really is no choice, because you're maybe the nearest school that might be able to accommodate you could be, so I don't know, it depends on where you're, maybe half an hour, 40 minutes or even longer down the road, and that's just not an option. You could be forced to have your child do communion or confirmation or even if they let you have the option of opting out, it's just going to be awkward, I think, I feel.
It is, yeah. And the opting out is awkward on a number of levels. You are allowed, constitutionally, you have a right to opt your child out of religious education. The difficulty is that the Catholic schools use what they call the integrated curriculum, which means that the Catholic ethos is integrated throughout the entire school day. So even if you formally opt your child out of religious instruction classes, you'll still find in nature study that they're told that, you know, God created the trees and the clouds and the birds and the bees, or they'll be singing hymns during music class, or there'll be all sorts of permeations of Catholic ethos throughout the school day. And the other problem is that schools, in practice, a lot of them will refuse to supervise a child who has opted out from religious class. So the parents, in practice, have an impossible task of having to go down to the school themselves and personally supervise their child during that period. And we did have a shocking case just a couple of years ago, where a member of Atheist Ireland had opted their child out of religious instruction class in a school in Leitrim. The school allowed them to do that, but the child was still coming home saying prayers. And when the parents complained about this publicly, some of the neighbours refused to let their children play with this family's child and essentially ostracised the child within the community to the extent that the family ended up moving to a different town.
And those kind of stories, if you don't expect to hear, you know, there's miles in Ireland, but it's more you'd hear of the Deep South more than, you know, a European country.
It is. It's like I said, Ireland is a really strange mix of largely urban and some rural areas that have moved on and that are now a modern pluralist secular society, and areas where the old traditional Catholic majoritarian bigotry still holds sway.
Okay, we.
I know, sorry.
So just saying, we do have a caller coming in, so you'll be in a few minutes. So carry on, catch what you
I know in our art school, it was the same kind of tradition. For graduation, it was the first thing went mass. Before every history class, we'd have to pray. Religion was really up until 40 or 50 year. It was merely more about Christianity than any of the other religions. Then when it got to 5th and 6th year. I think they realised that we just hadn't had enough, so they made it more about life skills than actual religion. But by the end, I'm not sure they just overdid it with the religion. But most of us were atheists, or at least leaning towards agnosticism.
Yeah, I think the big problem is primary school. If primary school is when children are most open to being indoctrinated. When you reach secondary school, at least you're closer to an age where you can think for yourself. I remember when I was in secondary school, we had one, it was a Christian Brothers school. And actually, as an aside, Liam Brady, the footballer who played in England and then managed Celtic in Scotland, Liam Brady went to the same school as I did, and he was expelled from school because he was picked for the Ireland schoolboys soccer team on the same day as he was picked for the St Aidan's Gaelic team, and was told if he didn't turn up for the Gaelic match, he needn't bother coming in again on Monday. So that's the type of education that we had in our only sex education class in secondary school. Somebody asked about condoms, and we were told that some people use condoms so that they can flush their unborn children down the toilet. So that's the type of education that my generation went through. I hope it's somewhat better now, but again, you know, that's a low hurdle to be moving from.
Is that St. Aidan's beside DCU?
It is.
I just did a course there, just part of volunteering about science and teaching science. It seems to have gotten a little bit better with religion, but I do know they're more in hurling now than it would be the Gaelic football. They're crazy about it.
All right, we can bring in our caller. Goxter, are you there?
I'm here. When you hear me?
Yes, I can hear you perfectly.
Okay, fantastic. First time I try a new computer. So that was troubling to know if it works. Okay, Michael, nice to meet you. I follow very well what happens in Ireland. It's very interesting. Because I'm Luxembourgish, and thanks to Ireland, we have Catholicism. We sent us some 100 years ago all the good missionaries to finally be also in the good faith here. but even sometimes the student is even better than the master, so we have even here a monarchy, and a monarchy well guided by Rome, and even sometimes nearly or very close to a constitutional problems, because when about abortion is spoken or is treated in the parliament, actually the king refused to sign the law, and like in Belgium, had to retreat or for several days because of sickness. In this case, the law could be voted in the parliament without the signature of the ruling king or our Grand Duke. That was the first statement where I would get in. What is now especially interesting is to follow what happened in Ireland, and because in Luxembourg also we speak for the moment a lot about the separation of church and state. Will it happen? We speak a lot about being allowed of blasphemy, because also in Luxembourg it's not even allowed to insult the ruler, the king, or the Grand Duke, how you ever want to call him. So it's really interesting to see how you handle the things in Ireland, and this is a really good example to follow also for Luxembourg.
Yeah, I think the key thing with blasphemy laws is well, there's two things really. One is just on principle. It's important to articulate that we should be allowed to criticise ideas. We can respect people's right to hold whatever beliefs they want, but we can't be expected to automatically respect the content of their beliefs. And that's an absolutely, you know, rock hard bottom line that we have to maintain. The second thing that I find very worrying about blasphemy laws at the moment, particularly Ireland, because we've got a new blasphemy law, but also in other European countries where there are anachronistic old blasphemy laws just still on the books, is that the Islamic states, where there are far more serious infringements of human rights based on blasphemy laws than there are in Europe, are using the existence of Western blasphemy laws to bolster their arguments internationally that there's nothing, not only is there nothing wrong with blasphemy laws, but they should be spread throughout the world. And so you have people like Asia Bibi, a Christian in Pakistan, who's facing execution at the moment for what's essentially a grudge between neighbours that got out of hand. You have Hamza Kashgari, who's a Muslim poet in Saudi Arabia, who's in jail for tweeting that he would shake hands with Muhammad as equal. And you have Alexander Ann, an atheist in jail for saying on Facebook that God doesn't exist. So I think it's important that we campaign against these laws, not only because they're bad things to have on our own books, but also because of the impact that they have internationally in Islamic states.
Absolutely, that's what how I see it. So just want to have a little idea on abortion. I think that it's maybe sometimes the message which doesn't get out really right is that this child murder thing or being pro-life or pro-choice. The biggest problem I see there, as long as we have religion involved in our politics, scientists are not allowed to define for good where actually life starts really. So I, in my opinion, is a science problem, is a scientific statement, and it should never be a religious statement. In what period of time or after how many months of insemination could we consider a fetus a human being? And it's this which I think is the most important, that we have to get more involved, more scientists involved, to actually come out with such a statement and to promote such a statement, and not only leave the religious talking about where their statement comes from. That's all we know.
Yeah, I agree. Because certainly if you take two extreme ends of the spectrum, if you take very early abortions, when you're talking about early stage embryos, or if you take the case where the life of the mother is directly at risk, if you take both of those cases, the only argument against abortion is a theological one. You know, there is no ethical or scientifically based argument against abortion in either of those cases. So I do agree. However, I mean, it may well be difficult for science to determine exactly when something becomes a human being. But there's another point, which is even given that, is that even if there is a born human being, there are no other circumstances in which a person is obliged by law, under pain of criminalization, to allow something to happen inside their own body in order to keep another person alive. You know, you're not required by law to give a blood transfusion. You're not required by law to give an organ donation in order to keep even a close relative alive who was born. So even regardless of when a fetus becomes a human being, that's not the only part of the argument. There's also the part of the ethical part of the argument about the bodily integrity of the woman who's pregnant.
I fully agree, yes. There's a lot to think about. The only thing what I can maybe argue is I wouldn't call it a religious, but rather a philosophical.
I agree completely, yeah.
Yeah, okay.
Yes.
Thank you very much.
Okay, thank you, Boxer. Okay,
just wanted to ask about the recent visit of Senel Edmarikuku. I always pronounce that wrong. I just wanted to ask about how important do you think his trip was, and do you think that has motivated people to get involved against blasphemy laws and the separation of church and state?
Yeah, I should clarify first who Sanal is. Sanal Edmarikuku is the president of the Indian Rationalist Association and also president of Rationalist International. And he's currently facing blasphemy charges in India, instigated by elements of the Catholic Church within India, because he explained a supposedly miraculous crying statue of Jesus as being caused by faulty plumbing from a nearby toilet and capillary action. And because of that, he now faces potentially 3 years in jail. The police have called to his house to arrest him. He has left the country and is currently moving around Europe giving talks on blasphemy. So we had him in Ireland last week. We had public meetings in Dublin, in Cork, in Galway and in Belfast. We met with politicians to lobby for his case and to ask them to lobby governments for his case. And we also brought him to Ballinspittle in County Cork, which is the site of one of our homegrown Irish miracles, where in the 1980s thousands of people came to see a supposedly moving statue of the Virgin Mary. And we brought Sanal down to see that, and with the aid of a tripod and a laser pointer, we videoed an experiment showing that the statue is not actually moving.
This guy is facing blasphemy laws because he debunked a so-called miracle.
Yep.
And, the Indian Catholic Church would have lots of fun if they ever looked at what some of the stuff is that goes on online. It's not offensive to offer an alternative explanation to something. I don't get offended by the fact that creationists say, this is what I believe, that's fair enough. But when they start telling me, as a scientist, a sciencey type person, however you want to look at it, that their book must be true, and trying to twist what's actually there to fit their book, that's when I get annoyed. I don't get annoyed by them thinking it. They're quite entitled to think whatever dopey things they want to think.
I agree. And I mean, it's the core issue. It's not merely that religion is not necessarily right or morally right. It's that religious beliefs corrupt our sense of right and wrong. Because what they do is, instead of what we would ordinarily, look at things in terms of trying to identify reality based on observation and evidence and trying to identify what is morally right, based on compassion and empathy and reason. What religion does is says, no, you've got to override all of that because somebody wrote something down in a book 2,000 years ago. And that's really where religion is not only silly, but is also harmful.
I'd also highlight how important that scientists should be getting involved against blasphemy laws, because this was really just somebody using basic science to prove something wrong, a religious idea wrong. But also, blasphemy laws could be used against anyone who's researching or teaching in the science of evolution or trying to disprove the claims of homeopaths or any religious faith healer. that those blasphemy laws can really do more harm in terms of health as well as just restricting freedom of speech and also corrupting science.
If you go back to safety tape recently, last year or whenever it was, that there was speculation that quantum physicists might have discovered that some subatomic particles could move faster than the speed of light. Now, as it turned out, that wasn't the case, and it was just faulty instrumentation. But when that speculation came out, you know, you didn't have scientists, threatening to burn down the buildings of scientists who had come up with that speculation, or threatening to kill them, or going off into corners to chant to themselves that the speed of light, cannot be broken. What happens in science is that, as distinct from religion, is that science is always open to changing what it believes to be the case based on the currently best available evidence. Whereas religion does the opposite. Religion starts off with a conclusion and then defends it at all costs against the evidence.
And we have a caller.
Yes, we do.
I just noticed.
Yeah, Lady K1.
Is she online?
Yes,
she?
Yeah. It's Lady K1 in Calgary, Alberta.
Hello.
Can you hear us?
Hello, yes. Yes, welcome to the show. Ask a question.
Yeah, hi. I wanted to ask your guest what he thought on the Vatican, what his views were, and what part the government plays in within the Vatican. What, I'm not sure how I want to present the question, but I want to know what his thoughts are on the Vatican.
Well, the first thing about the Vatican is that it is it's the head of the Roman Catholic Church internationally. It's the only church that has managed to persuade most of the countries of the world to play along with the fiction that it is also a state, and has given what is essentially a few buildings and a park in the middle of Rome the status of an actual state, despite the fact that it doesn't have proper citizens, doesn't have a proper economy, doesn't provide its own public services, doesn't provide its own police force other than in a ceremonial way, and yet it is still allowed to swap ambassadors with actual countries around the world and claim diplomatic immunity when it is accused of crimes around the world. So the first thing I think is we've got to say to the Catholic Church, you're not a state, you're a religion, and you should be treated as a non-governmental organisation and not as a pretend state. And on that basis, as an Irish Justice Minister a few years ago, Michael McDougall, put it, that canon law should have the same status within democracies as the internal rules of a tennis club. So it's whatever they want to do internally, but it's nothing to do with the law of the land. And I think the precedence of democracy and one law for all has to be the bottom line in terms of dealing with any organisation, regardless of whether or not they claim that they're getting their rules from the creator of the universe.
Thank you.
Okay. No.
And if I could just chip in, when Michael was speaking, I just had this hilarious little thought of, he's not a Messiah, he's just a very naughty boy.
Yeah.
I just want to also announce how the poll is going on what is your position on abortion. We have top still on top. Abortion is available on request. That's with 82.35%. That's followed by a case of rape and incest at 11.76, and third is when the mother's life is at risk, and that's at 5.88, and with still 0%, no one has voted for never. So that's nice to see that our audience is quite humane.
Okay, and we have another caller lined up. Hello, G, are you there? Hello, Jay?
Yeah.
Okay, you're on with Michael. Ask a question.
Yeah, I am with you.
Yeah, you can ask a question now.
Hello?
Hello.
Good evening.
Yeah.
Okay.
Evening.
Yeah, ask a question now.
Republic guys said that... child from rape is a child. Yeah, I think. Some of Republic said child from rape is a child from love. How can be love with the violence and against?
We've lost her there. I think she was referring to like the Republican candidate that said a child from rape is a child from is a gift from God or something, which is just a crazy thing.
Yeah, that's the gist of what I was getting. That it was something like, you know, the whole thing of it's still God's plan kind of thing.
Yeah.
That cost him the election, didn't it?
Well, I don't know if that's what cost him the election, but it certainly didn't help him.
I'll try and add her back in. Let's see if she's there. Hello, Jay. Are you there?
Sorry, guys. I got disconnected.
No problem. You can ask your question again. Are you there?
Okay. Yeah. I was talking about Republic guys said in USA, child from rape is a child from love. How come child from rape come through violence and abuse and rape? How come be like a child from love? So what do you...
The simple answer I would say is that this guy's stupid.
That's
I think what it is on a more serious basis, I do agree that it's stupid, obviously, is that it's what happens when you allow religious beliefs to corrupt your sense of morality by allowing these theological instructions to override your natural sense of compassion and empathy. Whoever it was said that, if it was their own wife or their own daughter that had been raped, I doubt very much if they would be taking as casual an attitude to those issues as they are when they're talking abstractly about other people.
I think there was actually, funny enough, this election cycle, there was a Republican elected who was, can't remember his name, I'm just going to find it now, he was found to be pressuring his mistress into having an abortion. He was videotaped just trying to get her to have an abortion. And he was, you know, pro-choice, pro-family, just the whole... Basically the good Republican.
Yeah, the false stereotype where they portray themselves as being whiter than white, and then all the dirty secrets come out.
Yeah, but I mean, what can you expect when the Catholic Church itself, you know, behaves in that way? Not only is it pontificating to other people how they should ethically deal with sexually related issues, but they have the most warped and uncompassionate and clinical view of sexuality in terms of their own behaviour and what they cover up within their own organisation, that they should be the last people to be telling other people what to do.
I found a name that his name is Scott DeJarlis. Yeah, and he did actually get elected, even after all this. So
there's no count for people sometimes.
So, have you done any work like kind of?
Well, people will ultimately vote for people who deliver for them what they want, and you know, regardless of you know, it goes back to the Bill Clinton initial election phrase of it's the economy, stupid, and a lot of people ultimately will vote for their on the basis of their pocketbook rather than on the basis of more complex theology or either philosophical or ethical nuances.
So I was going to ask that what's happening right now? I know the UN is trying to push for blasphemy laws to be, you know, like, I don't know what exactly power they have, but they're trying to introduce something at the moment, aren't they? In the wake of the, was it Innocence of Muslims film? I think that's what their response was.
Yeah, it's At the United Nations, there have been attempts by the Islamic states for the last more than a decade to make blasphemy a crime internationally. And it's been resisted by the Western states and supported by the Islamic states. Yeah. After that utterly stupid YouTube video produced in America there recently about Muhammad, what happened was that the foreign ministers effectively of the European Union and the Organization of the Islamic States and two other Arab and African organizations issued a joint statement calling for people to respect all religions and all prophets. Now, they may have seen that as an attempt to try to bring people together, but it's actually an absurd position to take to suggest that we should be respecting David Koresh and David Icke, who would be included among the category of all prophets. So what has happened, fortunately, I think, is the Islamic States have since started to pull back a little bit because they're realizing they're not getting support for trying to make defamation of religion a crime, and they're now trying to reframe it as campaigning against Islamophobia, but it's essentially the same thing that they're trying to do under a different name.
And actually, funny enough, on that case on about that YouTube film, I just saw recently that Egypt court has sentenced 8 of the people who participated in the film to death. They're not in the country at the moment, luckily, but if they ever do go back to Egypt, they could be facing basically a death sentence for, as far as I know, they were tricked into thinking it was a different film.
If I remember right, the actors when they performed the completely different dialogue they were given, and it was all dubbed over with all the, and the guy who made it, he's from some extreme Christian sect in Egypt, I think.
What film's this? Is this a YouTube thing?
The Innocence of Muslims.
Yeah. All right, not seen it. I have mostly been living under a stone.
Yeah, but like from what I recall, he did kind of dupe all these actors into doing it. They performed completely different dialogue, and then when they saw it later, they were just stunned at what he'd done to them.
But what's shocking about this is that it shows that blasphemy laws are simultaneously extremely silly, and as you were saying earlier on, from the Monty Python films, he's not the Messiah, he's a very naughty boy. They're absurd to the point of being ridiculous as laws. But at the same time, they're being used to have people jailed, executed, attacked by mobs, and really have their lives, not only their freedom of conscience, but their actual lives in danger. What typically happens in Islamic countries when somebody is accused of blasphemy is that the accusation may come out of anywhere. It may come out of a political grudge. It may come out of a personal grudge between neighbours. A mob attacks the house of the person or the workplace of the person who's accused. The police arrive, and instead of dispersing the mob, they arrest the person who the mob are attacking, alleged for their own protection. The person ends up getting charged with blasphemy and either jailed or possibly executed. There are also two politicians in Pakistan who were assassinated in recent years for speaking out against blasphemy laws. The governor of Punjab was assassinated by one of his own bodyguards, who, when he went to court for killing him, was showered with rose petals by other lawyers out of respect for killing this politician for against blasphemy laws. And then the Christian Minorities Minister in the government predicted that he too would be assassinated, and unfortunately, so they're very, very strange laws in that they're both absurdly silly and deadly serious.
I just wanted to ask, what can kind of just ordinary people do to oppose these? Because our world leaders seem to be lack a backbone. They always want to just apologise for causing the offence rather than saying, well, this is just what we do in our country.
Well, I would say political lobbying, I know that sounds the obvious answer and a very simple thing to say, but political lobbying, just politicians will ultimately respond to what people are forcing onto their agenda as the most urgent thing for them to address. So political lobbying, both within your own country and also with ambassadors of the countries that are infringing on people's human rights on the basis of blasphemy laws. Because some of those countries, and particularly India, some of those countries are actually trying internationally to be seen as civilized countries, and so that sort of pressure internationally can be useful.
Yeah, the lady that was on earlier, Lady K1, she apologised. She got a little bit tongue-tied asking her question to you, but she was wanting to know, what role does the Vatican play within world governments?
Well, the Vatican at the United Nations has got what is called special observer status. And it got that initially because, despite not being a proper state, because it issues its own stamps, it is part of the International Postal Union. And because it has its own radio station, it was part of the International Telecommunications Union. And because of those two things, it managed to get itself invited to subcommittees of the United Nations dealing with those issues. It then, without any vote, managed to get itself involved at a wider level and managed to change the organisation that was associated with the United Nations from the Vatican, which is their pretend state in the middle of Rome, to the Holy See, which is not even their pretend state in the middle of Rome, but which is the official international ruling body of the Roman Catholic Church worldwide. So it now has this special observer status at the United Nations, which gives it all of the powers of an ordinary state, apart from it can't vote at full session meetings. But it doesn't need to do that because most of the decisions at the UN are taken by consensus, so it can slow things down at other levels, particularly on issues like women's reproductive rights or condoms in Africa or gay rights, where it regularly sides with the Islamic states to oppose progressive moves by the United Nations.
Okay, there's another question I got. It's almost gone out of my mind there. Okay, I forgot. Could someone else kind of, I try and remember what I was going to ask you?
Sure. I just want to ask how in the gay rights move in Ireland, how's that coming along in terms of where it used to be illegal to where it is now? Do you think we will see gay marriage within the next 5, 10 years?
I think we will, yeah. I think all these moves are inevitable. It was until relatively recent illegal in Ireland to have a gay relationship. That was eventually changed by a case at the European Court of Human Rights by Senator David Norris, who is the first openly gay politician to be elected to public office at a national level in Ireland. David brought that case and ultimately forced the Irish government to change its laws. David also came up with one of my favourite quotes in Irish politics with regard to gay rights, which was when the Catholic Church said some years ago that it was ethically okay to discriminate against gay people in certain circumstances, and the media asked Senator David Norris for his response to that. And to put this into context, Archbishop Desmond Connell, who is the archbishop who had said that it was okay to discriminate against gay people, wrote his doctoral thesis partly on angels. So that's the sort of person that we're dealing with here. David was asked about Archbishop Connell's comments, and he said, well, it just goes to show, David Norris said, that Archbishop Connell may know a lot about angels, but he knows feck all about fairies.
What was that? I missed it.
Senator David Norris responded when the media asked him about Archbishop Connell's statement that it's okay to discriminate against gay people. Senator Norris said, well, it goes to show that Archbishop Connell may know a lot about angels, but he knows feck all about fairies.
Actually, the fae are quite tricksy little creatures.
Yeah. Anyway, Womble's about to run off, so we're going to let you on the soapbox to promote something that's coming up very soon.
Yeah, next week is the Skeptic TV fundraiser. It's our second one. 2 years since we had the delightful, delightful pleasure of a 12-hour Skype call with certain questions. Actually, no, I can say the name because I don't have Colin here to put the picture up. Nephilim Free, yes. to survive 12 hours of Nephilim Free. So we are now making use of the anniversary of such an event to do a 12-hour fundraiser. This year it's for Sense About Science. They are an amazing charity. They do lots and lots of good work. I am hoping to get finalised the schedule this evening and get it officially out in all its glory. But we do have Phil Plait, the Bad Astronomer. We have DPR Jones, we've got Trolling with Logic. We have a woman speaker called Deborah Hyde that does really interesting stuff to do with like vampires and or unnatural predators, as she likes to call them. And it should be really good fun.
For all our viewers, there's one of our former guests, Chris Wanjek, is going to be making an appearance as well.
Yeah, we have Professor Dr. F. Roud making an appearance. we have Tombstone and
Drayden.
What's his Drayden? That's it. Yeah, from Grand Unified making an appearance. We've got a musicy hour very early on with the rock show coming on. So there's lots and lots of good stuff, and it should be really, really amazing. And I have to go do a few other bits and pieces and prep for Skeptic TV, which I think is on slightly later.
Yep. So you're on at 8:30, aren't you?
I'm not sure. I can't remember. But if someone can post the chat up and our Skeptic TV, our blog TV up in the chat.
Yeah. You don't need to. You just go down into a playground. We've got a Skeptic TV banner down there. You just click on it. It'll take you to Skeptic TV.
This is now the hour and a half point of a show that I've been on, and it's traditional Skeptic TV for. At this point,
the descent starts.
Descent. So yeah, you said okay, click on the playground as you pointed downwards.
Yes.
I'm not going to even say anything more. Thank you for having me on, and I hope having a female voice helped.
Definitely. All right, we'll see you later, Rombo.
See you later. Bye.
Bye.
See you, Rombo.
The always charming Rombo there. Okay, yeah. Good. I think there's some questions coming in, so if you can just fire on, I'll just check what the chat room's saying.
Sure, yes. I wasn't expecting to go straight back into questions, so we had a caller. I just want to ask, what will Atheist Ireland be doing in the future? Are there any immediate plans for campaigns?
Well, our main priorities are, firstly, promoting a policy document that we have called Five Steps to Civil Rights in a Secular Ireland, and that's campaigning for a secular constitution, secular parliament, secular government, secular education system, and secular healthcare system. So that's the paradigm in which all of our campaigning politically in terms of political lobbying takes place. We are also setting up an organisation called Good Without Gods, which is going to be engaging in charitable activities without preaching to people about supernatural beings.
This is just a wee side note. There's a special T-shirt that goes with that, isn't there? There's a T-shirt made for Good Without Gods. I only ask this because this summer I was on a wine tour in Georgia and the Caucasus, and the guy who was on my tour was wearing that very shirt. So I came across one of your folk out there, all the way out there.
Yeah, and I suspected the phrase is probably more generic than than proprietorial.
Well, I noticed his accent as well, so that's kind of what clicked in my brain just now.
Yeah, so that is we've started off by raising money for through Kiva for organisations who are trying to set up small businesses in parts of the world where it's difficult to get loans to do so. And we are also involved in just promoting atheism and reason over superstition and supernatural on a general basis. So there's kind of two elements to what we're doing. One is, as atheists, we are promoting atheism, reason, science, scepticism. And the second is, as secularists, we are joining with other organisations, whether they be religious or not, who want to campaign for separation of church and state. And so we try to keep those two aspects of what we're doing operating in parallel, because it's not only atheists that want separation of church and state, there are also religious people who want the same thing.
I was going to, the question I was wanting to ask here, like, how's the international effort going? Because, you know, if we have Richard Dawkins' famous quote, like, organizing atheists is like herding cats. So, like, how's the international networking going between all the different countries' atheist organizations?
Well, I think it's going very well. We've had just in recent years, in Dublin in 2010, we launched a newly restructured Atheist Alliance International, which is now a sort of properly international umbrella group with representing atheist groups around essentially all continents, and is organising regional meetings around the world in various continents to several every year. So on international lobbying, that provides a joint way of doing that, and it also provides just individual support from different countries for people in other countries who are at different levels of organisation in terms of promoting atheism and secularism.
What are the major countries involved in that alliance?
Well, if you go to Atheist Alliance, the Atheist Alliance website, you'll see the list. I mean, it's essentially, most continents, there are several countries, most of the European countries are involved, and there are countries from North and South America, Australia, Africa, there are countries involved from around the world, and each gives both moral and actual political support to other countries, where really speaking, I have to say really speaking, although it's very important to us to campaign for secularism in the Republic of Ireland and indeed in the United Kingdom and America, that really the big battleground is the Islamic States. The Islamic States at the moment is where people are really having their human rights infringed by theological states to a much more serious degree than we face in the Western countries.
Just speaking of, what's the most surprising country you've seen in the alliance? Like, is there anyone that just really, that really surprised you that there would be a group there?
Well, there's an atheist group in Pakistan, which is quite a courageous place to have an atheist group. Although, funnily enough, when we go to international regulatory bodies lobbying for secularism in Ireland, when we go to either, United Nations meetings, Council of Europe meetings, OSCE meetings, the reaction that we get when we introduce ourselves as being from Atheist Ireland, you'd swear that we've just said that, we're from Vatican atheists.
Do you find that kind of still a strong state? They just expect you to be Catholic in Ireland, that's it. Like Irish means really, Catholic, yeah. And Catholic means Irish.
Yeah, certainly. That misconception is still there internationally. And it's not helped by the fact that our laws are still very much Catholic laws, but it doesn't reflect the reality of the country.
I was going to say, do you get quite a negative reaction even in Ireland? Like, I just go by what I see on your Twitter, you do seem to get, some strong opposition to you, but in general, I mean, do you get a lot of flack from people in Ireland or the president, or sorry, the politicians, I mean?
Yeah, I think probably flack is probably too strong. Well, there are certainly right-wing Catholic lobbying organisations that do try to discredit us on an ongoing basis. So we do have to deal with that. I think with a lot of politicians, and possibly with a lot of members of the general public, I think it's probably more a case of just not understanding why we're concerned about these things. They assume that we're looking for an atheist state as opposed to a neutral state, or they assume that we're trying to take away the rights of Christians to believe what Christians want to believe. So there's a lot of misperceptions about atheism. People who believe, and even among non-religious people, even people who don't believe in gods are often reluctant to describe themselves as atheists because they mistakenly believe that saying you're an atheist is necessarily a claim of certainty. They believe that it is a state claim on the, similar to religious claims. People say, well, look, they're as bad as each other. Your religious people claim to believe there is a God, atheists claim to believe there isn't, and they're both as bad as each other. Whereas in actual fact, believing that there isn't a God is a belief that is proportionate to the best available evidence. So it doesn't require faith to hold that belief because it is a belief that's consistent with the evidence. Whereas it does require faith to believe that a God does exist because it's inconsistent with and even contradictory to the evidence. And then the other really important point is that most atheists I know do not claim with absolute 100% certainty to know that we are correct. You know, we're quite happy to say if we get new evidence, we'll change our minds. We won't go away, you know, chanting to ourselves to reinforce our existing beliefs. We'll just say, oh, right, we were mistaken, but we have yet to see that evidence.
Kitch, you wanted to add something there?
It's one of the things that really annoys me, Dan, when that atheists accuse of almost being religious. As well, obviously the religious, like the Christian fundamentalists and Islamic fundamentalists, et cetera, I'm just astounded. Like, I've always stopped dead in my tracks when I hear that atheists are as religious, even though we're just campaigning for really fairness in the eyes of the government. Fairness in terms of the state, in terms of education, healthcare, and other areas. But I'd only be really, really convinced that some atheists can be as religious as some of these religious fundamentalists. If you hear an atheist saying that they saw the face of Christopher Hitchens in a slice of toast.
I have a theory that every ordinary blank piece of toast is proof that there isn't a God.
It's like, I don't know, you saw the famous Mitchell and Webb sketch with a watermelon.
Oh, yeah. Yeah,
it cuts open and it says there is no God, it's written in the seeds inside. I was on the subject of like feedback and what's the kind of the very worst kind of, I don't know, bit of hate mail or email or just on Twitter, what's the worst you've ever gotten?
Well, I suppose going way back, even before the foundation of Atheist Ireland, I mean, when we were campaigning for divorce in Ireland, I remember putting up posters and having a small child saying to me, my mummy said that you're going to go to hell for putting up those posters. So you know, that's the type of atmosphere that we used to have not too long ago. I think now, look, we just get the usual sort of nonsense from people who either don't understand what it is that we're talking about, or who exhibit the type of hatred that, and sort of just virulent opposition that one would expect from a religion whose Old Testament is based on a story of a God who says that if you obey my rules, I'll help you kill those other people over there and steal their land. So it's not surprising when you've got that sort of book to back them up that you get virulent hatred coming from some of the followers.
Yeah, so speaking about the campaign on divorce, I just brought back a story my mother told me about during that campaign. One of her aunts called. She was a nun, and she called to say that she supported the divorce legislation, but she had to vote against it because that was the order from Rome, basically.
Yeah, I mean, it's shocking. I mean, one of the divorce referendums, which was defeated, the Irish Times had a photograph of a group of nuns from an enclosed order that don't come out other than to vote against divorce and abortion, and showed them coming out. And again, to put this into perspective, there was a famous phrase used by by one of the IRA leaders during the terrorist campaigns of the 1970s and 80s, that where they claimed they would take power in Ireland with an Armalite in one hand and a ballot box in the other. And during the divorce referendum, when there was a photograph of the nuns coming out of their enclosed order to vote against divorce, and they won that vote, I remember a reference in one of the papers to the referendum being won with a Carmelite in one hand and a ballot box in the other.
I'm not too aware. What's this thing about the divorce that you're talking about?
Well, divorce was unconstitutional and illegal in Ireland up until very recently. And there were, like, really, really serious political campaigns to try to remove that completely anachronistic ban. And so, like, Ireland has been going through, say, over the last, you know, 30, 40 years, a stage from where condoms were illegal, divorce was illegal, homosexuality was illegal, abortion was illegal, and gradually we're kind of, you know, moving very slowly along the road of getting rid of each of those anachronisms one at a time. But it's pretty slow going, and it's pretty hard going. Richard Branson was fined in Ireland in the 1990s for selling a condom in the Virgin Megastore in Dublin.
Didn't know that at all.
I heard of that actually just quite recently. I was just, again, stunned that it was also quite recently. I thought it was in the 1980s. So it was 1990s?
Early 1990s, yeah. It was also around that time. I remember there's a Christian group here brought out a lobbying group that brought out a really well produced, by which I mean physically well produced as opposed to the content, lobbying document titled 67 Reasons Why Condoms Spread AIDS and circulate that among politicians. After which I suggested that I congratulated them on bringing it out and said I was looking forward to their follow-up document, 67 Reasons Why Motorcycle Helmets Spread Motorbike AIDS.
I noticed, though, the lists, that list, they were all sexual or family-oriented, or they're all issues regarding sexuality and family. And it just brought in, I don't know why, that quote from the comedian Brendan O'Carroll on his show, Mrs. Brown's Boys. If you don't play the game, don't make the fucking rules.
Yeah, well, look, unfortunately, they do play the game, they just don't know. You know, look, it is the big issue, unfortunately, that the Catholic Church's obsession with sexual morality has corrupted Ireland's ethical discourse so much that moral issues in Ireland, you know, the phrase moral issues in Ireland is understood to mean sexual issues. You know, it's not understood to mean, you know, corrupt politicians or corrupt bankers. You know, the phrase moral issues in Ireland has that kind of meaning. And there was another case, like going back to say the 1960s, there was an Irish novelist called John McGahern who had a novel band called The Dark for being pornographic. And he at the time was a school teacher in a primary school in Ireland. And he was kind of advised, look, you shouldn't really bother coming back to school because you're not going to get your job back. But he went back, forced the parish priest to dismiss him. Then he looked for a letter explaining why he had been dismissed so that he could follow up with his union. The parish priest gave him a letter saying, Mr. McGahern knows full well the reason why he's been dismissed. He brought that letter to his union, and the union refused to take it up on the basis that if it had just been the book, that they might have been able to do something. But what with the fact that he had also married an English Protestant in a registry office, he was an impossible case. One of the union officials said to him, why is it that you married this English woman when there are thousands of Irish women going around with their tongues out for a husband? So that's the type of atmosphere that Ireland is slowly but surely emerging from.
I just wanted to ask one question. It's usually the very first question we ask a guest. So what actually led you to atheism, or were you always a sceptic, or, like, say, how did you get to that point?
Well, I remember when I was in primary school, we had to do projects, over the holidays, and over one of our Easter holidays, we were given the project of reading the Gospels and rewriting them in our own words. And I remember halfway through doing that, realising that it was nonsense, you know, and realising that, you know, this is essentially just, you know, comic book stories. So from then I didn't believe in God. For a long time, I would have considered myself an agnostic on the mistaken belief that I've mentioned earlier, you know, that you know, well, there might be something, and we can't know for certain. So agnosticism is the logical position to take. And it was only when I realised that agnosticism is quite consistent with atheism, that atheism isn't a claim of certainty, and that atheism is the belief that's most consistent with the evidence, if you use the same standards of burden of proof as you do with any other issue, that I felt comfortable with calling myself an atheist rather than an agnostic.
All right. And following on from that, when did you start becoming involved in atheist activism? What led you to that?
Yeah, well, I think it's part of a process. Like, I've been involved for decades in secular-related issues in terms of the kind of oppressive influence of the Catholic Church in Ireland. My late wife, who was a member of the Church of Ireland, had also sort of informed me about how her experience of how being a Protestant in the Republic of Ireland, you were discriminated against, you know, in the same way as Catholics in Northern Ireland. And so we were, both Anne and myself, were involved for a long time in campaigns against paramilitary terrorism in Northern Ireland, against the influence of the Catholic Church in the Republic, and against the influence of Protestant churches in Northern Ireland. And so as a follow-on to all of those type of issues, after the Good Friday Agreement and after the sort of diminishing of the violence in Northern Ireland, which had to me been up to then, you know, the most serious issue to campaign on in Ireland, the influence of religion sort of became the next most important issue. And when Atheist Ireland, the website, evolved into Atheist Ireland, the advocacy group seemed the natural thing to get involved.
All right. And Kitch, do you have something to come in with there? Or Tilden, even been very quiet.
Yeah, I've got a lot of back pain, but it's very interesting to hear the situation in Ireland and thinking about how the situation is in Denmark. I agree fully that what we should do is lobbying across the world and in our respective countries. Denmark, the Danish Atheist Society, which I'm on the board of directors, is also a member of the Atheist International Alliance. We got the problem in Denmark that the politicians use
important issue, and when Atheist Ireland, the website, evolved into Atheist Ireland, the advocacy group seemed the natural thing to get involved.
All right. And Kitch, do you have something to come in with there? Or Tilden, even been very quiet.
Yeah, I've got a lot of back pain, but it's very interesting to hear the situation in Ireland and thinking about how the situation is in Denmark. I agree fully that what we should do is lobbying across the world and in our respective countries. Denmark, the Danish Atheist Society, which I'm on the board of directors, is also a member of the Atheist International Alliance. We got the problem in Denmark that the politicians use
important issue, and when Atheist Ireland, the website, evolved into Atheist Ireland, the advocacy group seemed the natural thing to get involved.
All right. And Kitch, do you have something to come in with there? Or Tilden, even been very quiet.
Yeah, I've got a lot of back pain, but it's very interesting to hear the situation in Ireland and thinking about how the situation is in Denmark. I agree fully that what we should do is lobbying across the world and in our respective countries. Denmark, the Danish Atheist Society, which I'm on the board of directors, is also a member of the Atheist International Alliance. We got the problem in Denmark that the politicians use
important issue, and when Atheist Ireland, the website, evolved into Atheist Ireland, the advocacy group seemed the natural thing to get involved.
All right. And Kitch, do you have something to come in with there? Or Tilden, even been very quiet.
Yeah, I've got a lot of back pain, but it's very interesting to hear the situation in Ireland and thinking about how the situation is in Denmark. I agree fully that what we should do is lobbying across the world and in our respective countries. Denmark, the Danish Atheist Society, which I'm on the board of directors, is also a member of the Atheist International Alliance. We got the problem in Denmark that the politicians use the
important issue, and when Atheist Ireland, the website evolved into Atheist Ireland, the advocacy group seemed the natural thing to get involved.
All right. And Kitch, do you have something to come in with there? Or Tilden, even been very quiet.
Yeah, I've got a lot of back pain, but it's very interesting to hear the situation in Ireland and thinking about how the situation is in Denmark. I agree fully that what we should do is lobbying across the world and in our respective countries. Denmark, the Danish Atheist Society, which I'm on the board of directors, is also a member of the Atheist International Alliance. We got the problem in Denmark that the politicians use the
important issue, and when Atheist Ireland, the website evolved into Atheist Ireland, the advocacy group seemed the natural thing to get involved.
All right. And Kitch, do you have something to come in with there? Or Tilden, even been very quiet.
Yeah, I've got a lot of back pain, but it's very interesting to hear the situation in Ireland and thinking about how the situation is in Denmark. I agree fully that what we should do is lobbying across the world and in our respective countries. Denmark, the Danish Atheist Society, which I'm on the board of directors, is also a member of the Atheist International Alliance. We got the problem in Denmark that the politicians use the
important issue, and when Atheist Ireland, the website evolved into Atheist Ireland, the advocacy group seemed the natural thing to get involved.
All right. And Kitch, do you have something to come in with there? Or Tilden, even been very quiet.
Yeah, I've got a lot of back pain, but it's very interesting to hear the situation in Ireland and thinking about how the situation is in Denmark. I agree fully that what we should do is lobbying across the world and in our respective countries. Denmark, the Danish Atheist Society, which I'm on the board of directors, is also a member of the Atheist International Alliance. We got the problem in Denmark that the politicians use the
important issue, and when Atheist Ireland, the website evolved into Atheist Ireland, the advocacy group seemed the natural thing to get involved.
All right. And Kitch, do you have something to come in with there? Or Tilden, even been very quiet.
Yeah, I've got a lot of back pain, but it's very interesting to hear the situation in Ireland and thinking about how the situation is in Denmark. I agree fully that what we should do is lobbying across the world and in our respective countries. Denmark, the Danish Atheist Society, which I'm on the board of directors, is also a member of the Atheist International Alliance. We got the problem in Denmark that the politicians use the
important issue, and when Atheist Ireland, the website evolved into Atheist Ireland, the advocacy group seemed the natural thing to get involved.
All right. And Kitch, do you have something to come in with there? Or Tilden, even been very quiet.
Yeah, I've got a lot of back pain, but it's very interesting to hear the situation in Ireland and thinking about how the situation is in Denmark. I agree fully that what we should do is lobbying across the world and in our respective countries. Denmark, the Danish Atheist Society, which I'm on the board of directors, is also a member of the Atheist International Alliance. We got the problem in Denmark that the politicians use the
important issue, and when Atheist Ireland, the website evolved into Atheist Ireland, that the advocacy group seemed the natural thing to get involved.
All right. And Kitch, do you have something to come in with there? Or Tilden, even been very quiet.
Yeah, I've got a lot of back pain, but it's very interesting to hear the situation in Ireland and thinking about how the situation is in Denmark. I agree fully that what we should do is lobbying across the world and in our respective countries. Denmark, the Danish Atheist Society, which I'm on the board of directors, is also a member of the Atheist International Alliance. We got the problem in Denmark that the politicians use the
important issue, and when Atheist Ireland, the website, evolved into Atheist Ireland, the advocacy group seemed the natural thing to get involved.
All right. And Kitch, do you have something to come in with there? Or Tilden, even been very quiet.
Yeah, I've got a lot of back pain, but it's very interesting to hear the situation in Ireland and thinking about how the situation is in Denmark. I agree fully that what we should do is lobbying across the world and in our respective countries. Denmark, the Danish Atheist Society, which I'm on the board of directors, is also a member of the Atheist International Alliance. We got the problem in Denmark that the politicians use the
important issue, and when Atheist Ireland, the website, evolved into Atheist Ireland, the advocacy group seemed the natural thing to get involved.
All right. And Kitch, do you have something to come in with there? Or Tilden, even been very quiet.
Yeah, I've got a lot of back pain, but it's very interesting to hear the situation in Ireland and thinking about how the situation is in Denmark. I agree fully that what we should do is lobbying across the world and in our respective countries. Denmark, the Danish Atheist Society, which I'm on the board of directors, is also a member of the Atheist International Alliance. We got the problem in Denmark that the politicians use the
important issue, and when Atheist Ireland, the website, evolved into Atheist Ireland, the advocacy group seemed the natural thing to get involved.
All right. And Kitch, do you have something to come in with there? Or Tilden, even been very quiet.
Yeah, I've got a lot of back pain, but it's very interesting to hear the situation in Ireland and thinking about how the situation is in Denmark. I agree fully that what we should do is lobbying across the world and in our respective countries. Denmark, the Danish Atheist Society, which I'm on the board of directors, is also a member of the Atheist International Alliance. We got the problem in Denmark that the politicians use the
important issue, and when Atheist Ireland, the website, evolved into Atheist Ireland, the advocacy group seemed the natural thing to get involved.
All right. And Kitch, do you have something to come in with there? Or Tilden, even been very quiet.
Yeah, I've got a lot of back pain, but it's very interesting to hear the situation in Ireland and thinking about how the situation is in Denmark. I agree fully that what we should do is lobbying across the world and in our respective countries. Denmark, the Danish Atheist Society, which I'm on the board of directors, is also a member of the Atheist International Alliance. We got the problem in Denmark that the politicians use the
important issue, and when Atheist Ireland, the website, evolved into Atheist Ireland, the advocacy group seemed the natural thing to get involved.
All right. And Kitch, do you have something to come in with there? Or Tilden, even been very quiet.
Yeah, I've got a lot of back pain, but it's very interesting to hear the situation in Ireland and thinking about how the situation is in Denmark. I agree fully that what we should do is lobbying across the world and in our respective countries. Denmark, the Danish Atheist Society, which I'm on the board of directors, is also a member of the Atheist International Alliance. We got the problem in Denmark that the politicians use the
important issue, and when Atheist Ireland, the website, evolved into Atheist Ireland, the advocacy group seemed the natural thing to get involved.
All right. And Kitch, do you have something to come in with there? Or Tilden, even been very quiet.
Yeah, I've got a lot of back pain, but it's very interesting to hear the situation in Ireland and thinking about how the situation is in Denmark. I agree fully that what we should do is lobbying across the world and in our respective countries. Denmark, the Danish Atheist Society, which I'm on the board of directors, is also a member of the Atheist International Alliance. We got the problem in Denmark that the politicians use the
important issue, and when Atheist Ireland, the website, evolved into Atheist Ireland, the advocacy group seemed the natural thing to get involved.
All right. And Kitch, do you have something to come in with there? Or Tilden, even been very quiet.
Yeah, I've got a lot of back pain, but it's very interesting to hear the situation in Ireland and thinking about how the situation is in Denmark. I agree fully that what we should do is lobbying across the world and in our respective countries. Denmark, the Danish Atheist Society, which I'm on the board of directors, is also a member of the Atheist International Alliance. We got the problem in Denmark that the politicians use the
important issue, and when Atheist Ireland, the website, evolved into Atheist Ireland, the advocacy group seemed the natural thing to get involved.
All right. And Kitch, do you have something to come in with there? Or Tilden, even been very quiet.
Yeah, I've got a lot of back pain, but it's very interesting to hear the situation in Ireland and thinking about how the situation is in Denmark. I agree fully that what we should do is lobbying across the world and in our respective countries. Denmark, the Danish Atheist Society, which I'm on the board of directors, is also a member of the Atheist International Alliance. We got the problem in Denmark that the politicians use the
important issue, and when Atheist Ireland, the website, evolved into Atheist Ireland, the advocacy group seemed the natural thing to get involved.
All right. And Kitch, do you have something to come in with there? Or Tilden, even been very quiet.
Yeah, I've got a lot of back pain, but it's very interesting to hear the situation in Ireland and thinking about how the situation is in Denmark. I agree fully that what we should do is lobbying across the world and in our respective countries. Denmark, the Danish Atheist Society, which I'm on the board of directors, is also a member of the Atheist International Alliance. We got the problem in Denmark that the...